Welcome to the Context Machine, episode 570. I'm Brian Chaffin.
And I'm Jeff Gamet, and today we're going to talk about mice and other computer and tablet input devices. Ooh. Now, as we record this, we are still setting up our new home for the Context Machine, but it will eventually live at contextmachine.io. For now, you can reach us on Twitter at Context Machine.
That's exciting.
It really is.
At Context Machine, right there on Twitter, huh?
So, right on the Twitters, yeah.
So the Twitter tweet, okay, all right, good. I got it. At Context Machine. Let's see here. I like the topic. You know what I did? I just recently celebrated a birthday.
I know. Like, happy birthday.
I know. I'm 19. It's excellent. And rewatched Dune. I rewatched Dune.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the Dune?
I did see the Dune.
The good Dune, not the shirtless Sting Dune, which I, admittedly shirtless Sting good.
You know, the shirtless Sting Dune, I have a dysfunctional relationship with it because I enjoyed it, but I also found it frustrating and didn't like it at the same time. And in retrospect, I believe that David Lynch created a movie that, for many people, works better in a chemically altered state.
I wouldn't know anything about that. And to be fair,
nor would I.
The movie is terrible, but whenever anyone points that out to me, I counter with, "Yeah, but shirtless thing."
See, and that's an argument that you just can't refute.
Yeah. It is hard. The new version is so fantastic.
It is, but it does not have plastic winged underpants.
It doesn't, much to everyone's chagrin, I assume. But it does have. It is so epic in scale, and it is, you know what it is, man? Most books, most movies that try to hew closely to the book end up failing at making a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes, I will agree.
And at the same time, if they stray too far, it makes sometimes it'll make for a good movie, but oftentimes it just ruins the story especially for me. We've, you know, long ago talked about my problems with Game of Thrones and the Lord of the Rings movies. This movie hewed exactly to the book with one exception, and it's a curious obsession. I'm really wondering where they're going to take that. And it works.
Yeah, I enjoyed the movie. I'm sitting here thinking about the problem you have with movies that are different from the books.
If like, you're going to change a great book, it needs to make the movie better. I don't have a problem with change, but don't give me arbitrary change if it's a great book, and don't have it make the story less good. Don't change my story and then make the story less good.
I agree with you there. Yes, absolutely. So Douglas Adams, his philosophy was the story is in a different medium. Therefore, I can tell the story in a different way, which is why Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the book, and the radio play don't match. Mm-hmm. And then when they did the original series, mm-hmm. which was through BBC, it changed again. Mm-hmm. And Douglas Adams was okay with that. In fact, he did most of the writing to change the stories for the format that they were going to be presented in. And I find that very fascinating when you're intentionally making those changes to tell a story that you feel will be more compelling because of the medium that it's in.
Okay. Well, then why is it that I'm not alone here. Why am I so pissy about George Lucas changing his own film?
Okay, now that's because he told a story and it was in that medium and it was fine. And then he kept changing it and then it's just this different thing. And most notably, he completely changed the character of Han Solo with one scene. Because okay, now you have this character that... But there's no redemption arc for Han Solo.
Yeah,
he's just the normal good guy all the way through, who apparently can move faster than the speed of light.
His argument is that it was an editing glitch that gave us the Han Solo that we love. So he's just fixing it. It wasn't changing anything.
Well, then in that case, he failed at writing a character in a compelling way. And then instead of just accepting the lucky... editing that fixed his
problem.
He had to go and change it to make it wrong.
You know, I wonder
which in his mind is right.
I've never heard this. I don't have any evidence whatsoever. I'm wondering if the editors didn't like fix it for him originally.
See, that's a possibility. And then the other possibility is he changed his mind. And now he just has to keep.
He may even have convinced himself. Like if
there we go. I think that's more likely. He may have convinced himself.
Okay.
And
back to books though, and movies.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to make a change, make the change because it makes the movie a better movie. Don't make it because you want to fix it. If you're the director.
Mm-hmm.
And don't change it because you just want to change, like, you know, you just want to change some stuff. Don't do that. And it also depends on the caliber of book. I've said a million times, mm-hmm. if I were lucky enough to get my book published, my novel published, and then I were lucky enough to have the film rights sold, and then I were lucky enough for that to eventually become a film, change mm-hmm. what you need to change. I am not George Martin.
As long as the check clears, you're okay.
No, it's not even about the money. It's that I'm not George Martin. I'm not Tolkien. Right? I'm not even Stephen R. Donaldson.
This is true.
So, I mean,
I can tell. I've seen photos of all of them and I've met you in person. I can tell the difference.
So, I mean, like, I'm not, I haven't created a masterpiece. I've created a book that I'm very proud of, but it's not some kind of masterpiece. Game of Thrones is, in my opinion, and obviously this is subjective, is a masterpiece. The Lord of the Rings is a masterpiece. So if you're going to change something in Game of Thrones, or you're going to change something in Lord of the Rings, have it be because it makes it, to wit, it makes sense for Peter Jackson not to have done Tom Bombadil, one of my favorite parts of the book for The Lord of the Rings. It makes sense mm-hmm. that the movie did not need that. But don't ruin Faramir.
They were able to leave Tom Bombadil out, and the story worked. Mm-hmm. And then he turns around and does The Hobbit as a multi-movie thing, where it did not need to be what he turned it into.
Yeah. See, I've got to defend him a little bit on that. So I don't like him adding characters and a love interest like. Tolkien stories are not love stories. That does not make the movie better to me. Giving Arwen an increased role did not make the movie or the story better for me. Although I get why that happened. With The Hobbit, the vast majority of the additional material that he added was all the stuff from the appendixes and some of the other published stories. I get him wanting to be able to tell that story too.
Well, and I can appreciate that, but turning it into a multi-movie thing, here's my dirty little secret about his Hobbit movie series.
Yeah.
You know, the big battle where it's like all the armies are coming together and it just goes on and on and on and on. And partway through the movie, and actually bought these on the iTunes store, Apple Music store, whatever. So I've got these movies. I got partway through that battle and I got bored and turned it off and never finished watching the rest of it.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
I'd like to point out that this show never went off the rails because it never even got on the tracks.
Yeah, this is an episode about mice and other computing and tablet input devices.
or so we're telling ourselves.
So we're telling ourselves.
So, right. Brian, what sort of input device do you think Tom Bombadil used? I'm just trying to tie it together.
All right. So I haven't changed my Mac input device in years, except for buying A, new models, and B, a replacement model at one point because I broke the current unit that I was using. And that is Logitech's MX Revolution series. What is the current one called? I don't even know what the current one is. Now it's called the MX Master, and I've got the MX Master 3. The best mouse ever freaking made. Feels amazing in my hands. Responsive. Buttons are fantastic. Everything is ergonomic. It feels so good in my hand. It's just ridiculous. I love that mouse. I've loved it since the original one came out probably 10 years ago. And essentially the end for me in terms of my Mac. But there's a lot more to this topic. And I know that you used to be Mr. Roller Dude. What do you call those?
Trackball.
Trackball, right. Top man here.
Yeah, I'm Mr. Roller Dude. I'm Mr. Roller Dude. I'm Mr. Spin. There's got to be a Rankin and Bass story in there somewhere. Okay, so, Brian, I find it fascinating that you have the Logitech, what is it, the MX3?
MX Master 3.
And MX Master 3. And it's and this is like your alpha and omega of input devices. And yeah. And I got a Kensington Orbit trackball back when they first came out. It had an ADB plug on it. Like that's so system 8 something. I'm assuming it was at least system 8. Maybe it was system 7. I don't know. 7.5 or something. And I still use a Kensington Orbit trackball. But that was not my beginning and end. It was my beginning of going beyond the mouse that Apple included with whatever Mac I bought at the time. And my input device selection has continued to grow and evolve over the years, where the Orbit is still on my desk right now, and I use it
really
all the time. Oh, yeah. Huh. But it's expanded out over the years to include a lot of other input devices for pointing. Like I have on my desk right now, I have my Kensington Orbit. I have a Wacom Intuos graphics tablet. Okay, yeah. I have a Magic Trackpad.
Hold on. I'm going to put notes on Magic Trackpad. Okay, go ahead.
I have a Stream Deck.
Okay, yep.
And I'm using my iPad as well as an input device.
Should I be actually faking writing sounds?
Okay, got it. You can add that in post.
What's the last one?
My iPad Pro.
iPad Pro, right. Did you hear those scratching noises?
Yeah. I totally heard the scratching noises.
Here we go.
Yeah. Oh, that was nice. That was some excellent Foley action right there.
Top men.
Top men.
So, why does anyone Let us do
so here's the scenario. Brian, you move on from Mac Observer, and mm-hmm. then you call me and say, "Hey Jeff, do you want to do a show together?" Mm-hmm. And somehow I said, "Yes."
Yeah, what's wrong with you, man?
I don't know.
And the thing is like you could have stopped. Anyway, all right. So
I could have said no, and yet here we are.
And you like any point you could say no. At any point you could say
wait,
no.
Seriously?
Yeah, you could still say no.
I hear my mom calling. I gotta go.
All right. So you're using all of those devices, and I'm assuming it's not just like some random like
at chain. The same time, yes, Brian.
Or you're like, you know, just like, oh no, now I have to go shift over to this because I'm, you know, like completely insane. It's like you're using a different either a different combination or a different, and you didn't even include Apple Pencil, did you?
Well, the Apple Pencil goes along with the iPad. Okay, but when I'm using that as an input device on my Mac, yeah, I use my Apple Pencil.
Okay, that makes sense. And, but you're not just randomly like, you know, through some sort of like completely crazy compulsion switching.
No.
Randomly. It's
I know, surprising, but it's not like I spin a dial and say, now I will point with this.
What I'm thinking of is I had this friend along many, many years ago, back in my scooter days, my Vespa days. And he was a mechanic guy. He definitely, you know, he knew engines. And I was over at his house one day, and I had no idea how ADHD he was. And he would like he had this old car that he was working on, and he had two Vespas that he was working on, and literally every few minutes he would switch. It'd be like, you know, I don't know if it like caught his eye. Or if his mind just jumped or what, but he could not keep working on the same project. He had to just switch and switch and switch and switch. You're not doing that. That's my point.
No. And the reason my collection of input devices has ballooned over the years is because each one serves a specific purpose or range of purposes. So just my general point and click activities. The Kensington Orbit is great. It's an ambidextrous device, so I'm left-handed, and that's an important thing for me. Something that fits my hand, and with two buttons that I can cord, meaning use the two buttons at the same time for an additional function. I can do single click, double click, and control click, or command click, without having to do more than one click. Okay. It's just one button, the other button, or two at the same time. And, you know, and that's awesome because I'm reducing the number of clicks I'm doing. And while you can say, one click versus two clicks, come on, Jeff. But when you're talking about doing that hundreds of times a day, over decades, I mean, that's a sort of thing that eventually builds up into a repetitive stress injury.
Sure.
So I have dramatically reduced the amount of clicking I do by the way I've programmed the buttons. One of the later additions to my setup is having the Magic Trackpad. And the reason I added that in was because I realized that I wanted to be able to do more with gestures than I can do with a closed lid MacBook Pro. So now when I went to scroll, my hand goes to the Magic Trackpad. I don't use it as a pointing device that much. It's a gesture device.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And it reminds me that I've always been excited about gestures. I feel like they're an important step forward, and yet I don't use the Apple Trackpad, the Magic Trackpad that I bought. I don't use it. I don't know how much of that is like, meh, the mouse works fine. You know, I don't
get that trackpad off my lawn.
Yeah, I don't know how much of it is that, or how much of it is my pure love, but just absolute love. By the way, it's the biggest thing about the MX Master mouse is the scroll wheel. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that part? Play straight
for me. Yeah, and Brian. Wait, the MX Master has a scroll wheel? Tell me more.
It has a scroll wheel, and it does this free floating thing. So you can have it either be in clicky mode, where you know it ratchets, or when you can actually feel it ratchet physically, or it you can put it into free scrolling mode where essentially the wheel, first of all, it's heavy enough to do this, but it's like a flywheel. And you spin it with your finger and it just spins on its own. So when you have like a really long document, it'll spin and spin and spin for you. And better yet, you can have it go from mode to mode automatically based on how fast you spin it, all of which is controllable through their software. So like when, you know, in normal, I have it in ratcheting mode, but whenever I get to any kind of long web page or something like that, just spin it free and it, you know, and like, that's just it's the best thing ever, man. It's the best thing ever. So I don't know how much of it is my love for all that or I don't want to change and start using a trackpad despite my interest in gestures.
Well, with the scroll wheel function that you have, mm-hmm. I get why there would be a natural resistance to using the trackpad all the time, because one of the great things about trackpad gestures is being able to, like in my case, two fingers and I'm just sitting there zipping, scrolling through pages, mm-hmm. and long documents. Mm-hmm. Whereas you have the scroll wheel that you can do that with, and that works very effectively for you. So you don't have a pain point there that you need to address, where a trackpad in your case, I think, would be adding in additional things as opposed to fixing something that's a problem for you.
Right. And those additional things would probably be worth it to add, except for I don't get around to doing it, but gestures, I mean, are,
that's human nature. You're not going to do it until it becomes a pain point where you need to solve something. Why I have the trackpad. I had a pain point.
I just turned like 102 years old too.
That's true. Your electrons move slower now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I am finding it interesting that, okay. I'll start with, I know you so well, and I know how you get something that works. You get set in whatever it is, and then the likelihood of that changing until something happens that it really forces the need for the change. You're not going to switch it up.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that in a bad way. I cast about until I find the thing that I like, and then when I find the thing that I like, I don't want to change. So I'm like, sure. I'm happy to experiment up until that moment that I find the thing that I like.
It's true. And then you're set.
It's true with restaurant menus. It's true with individual restaurants. It's true with my technology.
I get it. And that makes sense. And so what I'm trying to figure out is, am I more willing to just add in more stuff into my system and make it more complex? Or am I hitting more pain points that I feel I have to address than you are?
I think it's probably just our different, approaches.
Yeah, could be. Yeah. I mean, getting a graphics tablet, which I've had for years and years and years, made sense because I was doing stuff in Photoshop and Illustrator. Mm-hmm. And then that evolved into, hey, I can use this as a system-wide pointing device. So when I went to change the position my hand is in, give my hand a break from using the trackball, I'll just use the stylus and that will be my pointing device. And that was just like a natural evolution. a pain point with adding in the trackpad because I needed to start using gestures because of the way I was using everything else. Okay, adding in the Stream Deck. There were so many things that I was trying to automate where it was becoming cumbersome. I needed something like this to take on that role.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there like, how much desk space do you even have left now?
Well, yeah. Yeah. You know, first world problems to be sure. Just to point this out for those listening at home, you also were very happy to experiment with Google Home, Amazon's A Lady, and Apple's S Lady.
That's true. I have speakers for all three in my living room right now.
And you have like a mixed use environment in your own home. And mm-hmm. I would never tolerate that. For me, I want Apple's HomeKit stuff because I feel like rightly or wrongly that Apple's going to do at least a slightly better job of protecting my privacy. Also, I have issues with both other companies, but if I were to prefer the A-Lady, I would be all A-Lady. If I was going to do Google Home, I would be all Google Home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
I can see that.
So I'm just saying that is a different thing for us. That is a way in which we're different.
That's true. Okay. Now you have an iPad Pro iPad.
I have an iPad Pro, the current one, yes.
And you have an Apple Pencil?
That I don't use, yes.
Bless your heart. So here's a place where you can start experimenting.
If I drew, I would adore the Apple Pencil. And it would be tethered to my Apple Pro in some way.
And I feel obligated to point out that I do seriously, this is not a joke, I do love your drawings.
Stop. Stop.
But this is a place where you could experiment a little bit with alternate input. And by alternate input, I mean something other than your MX Master, because you can use Sidecar. So you can have your iPad Pro as a secondary screen for your Mac setup, or tertiary, however many screens you're up to now. And then use your Apple Pencil with that.
Yeah, I could. I don't. It's probably not something I'm going to do simply because I don't currently have a problem with my display setup.
That's only because you haven't been using your iPad as a sidecar device.
Maybe. That's fair. Could be.
So I have this 34-inch display, and I have it's from 12 South, their iPad arm. Oh, I can't believe I forgot the name of it.
I'm looking it up.
Yes, please look it up. I have an iPad sitting here beside my 34-inch wide display.
The Hoverbar Duo?
As an extra display. Hoverbar Duo.
That's pretty cool. Adjustable iPad.
It's really cool.
iPhone stand with both weighted desktop base and shelf clamp.
That's it.
Yeah, that's really sweet looking. I somehow, by the way, have only seen that just now.
Well, then I'm glad we're here so you could see it. I took the weighted stand off mine and use a clamp.
Yeah,
so sure. That it doesn't take up as much desk space to have it sitting there.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's crazy just how nice it is to have that extra display space for the couple things that I just want to throw off to the side. Or like if I want to have notifications popping up, because everything is sharing notifications now. I can just have notifications showing up on that screen through iOS and not having them show up on my Mac. And so they're just out of the way.
Wait, but you're using it as a sidecar.
Sometimes. Other times it's just sitting there as a screen that's off and lights up when notifications come in.
I see.
It depends on what I'm doing in the moment.
That makes sense.
Can I tell you a problem that I'm having?
Yeah.
It's and this is an input.
Wait, hold on.
Device problem.
Hold on. Okay, go ahead.
This is why I said yes when you said, "Hey, should we do a show?"
Got it.
So, I have this Wacom Intuos tablet, which is great, but you can't see what you're working on that. So you have this disconnect where you're drawing on the tablet, but you're looking at a display instead and seeing what's happening based
amazing
on what you're doing with your hand.
Right? When that was the state of the art, it was a huge step forward for artists in particular.
It's artists. Still amazing.
It's still amazing. So I just want to offer that context.
Yeah. So, but then... Wacom came out with the Cintiq line, mm-hmm. which is a computer display mm-hmm. that includes Wacom styluses. Mm-hmm. And so you have the whole pressure sensitive, everything, just like you do with the Intuos. But now you can see what you're working on because it's on the display in the tablet and you're putting the stylus on the screen and it's more like a pen on paper, paintbrush on canvas, whatever. So I would love to have one of these because it would be such a great upgrade from my my old Intuos. Mm-hmm. But I have an iPad, an Apple Pencil, and Sidecar. So I can put, say, an Affinity Photo document window on the iPad in Sidecar and use my Apple Pencil and do stuff on the screen as if I had a Cintiq tablet.
Except for you can actually... see what you're doing.
With the Cintiq, you can see that. I mean, that was the whole point of the Cintiq line.
But, okay, right, sorry.
Yeah, so...
No one... Go ahead.
Yeah, no one will ever know. It's amazing how much we fix in post.
Oh, yeah.
So, I can do basically what I did, or could do with a Cintiq tablet with an iPad Pro. So, is it worth it to invest in a Cintiq or just use my iPad as a visual iPad graphics tablet?
Way higher resolution, too.
Compared to the original Cintiq line, yes. Now, it's really high resolution on a Cintiq. And I can get a larger display, so I have a larger surface space to work with.
Yeah, that is a very, very good point. I would imagine this is one of those cases where, by the way, for those following along at home and thinking about their own workflow, if you are a professional, like professionals may want to do something like the Cintiq, but... Mm-hmm. Most of us can probably get by with, like, if we wanted to have some kind of input device set up like what we're talking about, the iPad is probably going to work just fine for most folks, especially if they already have it.
Yeah. And see, so now you see my conundrum.
Well, because maybe you don't. Yeah, you're a prosumer at the least. You do professional quality work. But it's not.
Oh, thank you.
It's not your. It's not your like sole source of income.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So you know maybe if the folks over at
Cintiq. So maybe Wacom should send Wacom, me
yes.
over a Cintiq.
Yes. Now I'm sure they're going to be very interested in doing so since I just forgot their name moments after we used it, and I've written about them many times in the past.
Well, you know, you get a gold star for effort.
No,
I mean,
no, I don't.
It was a really good try, Brian.
No.
You get a silver star for effort.
Okay, well, so listen, we're already like, do you remember how we said that we were going to do like half hour shows?
Yeah.
That ship sailed 5 minutes ago. But I want to, like, computer input is evolving and changing around us as we speak. Like this mouse that I'm so happy about, you know, the mouse was shown to us by Doug Englehart, right? In 1960 something. Right?
Who's a long time ago.
Inventor, Englehart, isn't it?
Maybe. I mean, that sounds right, but at the same time, that might just be sounding right because I emotionally want to support you.
Yeah, it's Doug Englehart.
Okay.
Gosh, I knew there was something that was wrong about it. I mean, you know, obviously it wasn't commercialized until Apple gave us the mouse. Xerox PARC, the Xerox PARC computing system that they had going, they had a mouse too, but it was Apple that actually, you know, really commercialized it and mainstreamed it. The point is that the mouse is decades old and things haven't really changed in a long time. Today's mice are better. This MX Rev Master 3 that I'm using is just ridiculously good, but we have people growing up where their finger is their mouse. Their finger is their input device because they're using touchscreen devices. And at the same time, you know, Apple has taken the iPad, which was this touch input device, and it's just your finger and you know, you got 10 of them, get 10 of them into your hand. And we sort of like gone backwards.
Where someday I'll be able to do that like you do.
I'm still pissy with Steve about that. And now you can actually get a keyboard, which is like sort of a step backwards. But then we've got Universal Control that is so good. Oh, wait, we're still waiting on that. We got Universal Control. Yeah, which is
soon,
coming
soon.
Soon, it's very soon, and the sidecar is a thing. So like things are changing and evolving, you know, around us right now. And sci-fi is showing us, you know, starting with the ridiculous calisthenics that Tom Cruise was doing in Minority Report. And
oh my God, yes,
you know, and then you know, flash forward to what 10, 15 years later, right? At least it's been about 15 years. Maybe longer since Minority Report came out.
Time flies when you're having fun.
You watch a show like Expanse, where people are just like super comfortable going from manipulating holographic displays, but also working with their handheld device, which may or may not still be a thing that far in the future, but whatever. And casually going back and forth between the two and being like really contempt, like they'll flick something over to someone. And it's just this lazy motion, right? It's one of the things I just love about the Expanse is how much work they put into trying to make these changes not only part of everyday life in the future, but a part of everyday life that everyone takes for granted, right? They did such a great job of that. So anyway, you know, like that sci-fi is showing us that now, and it's probably not that far away. And it is interesting how all of this is changing, Jeff.
It is. And it's amazing to me how fast it's changing. And at the same time, how static it seems to be. And by that, I mean, you know, we have all these amazing new touch devices for doing input. And there's just all this cool technology. But at the same time, the core functionality still feels like it's based on the whole design interface
from the mother
that we had.
Mother of all. What do they call that?
Yeah. The mother of all invention. I don't know.
The mother.
It's, I can't remember.
Of all, it's the thing that Douglas Engelbart did.
Yeah, and I can't remember.
Mother of all demos.
There we go. Yeah, and you know, it's look at what Xerox had that Apple went to go and look at and license and turn into the interface concept for Mac OS. Mm-hmm. So, you know, point and click, windowing, all of that. That, even though we've had all these other advances, the core of it, it's still that from the 1960s and 1970s.
Yeah, it is.
And I think for the radical change that can come with input isn't going to come until we start looking at the way we interact with our content in a different way. And what exactly that will be? Well, I mean, we'll see over the years to come, but I think until that happens, keyboard, mouse, trackpad, stylus, that whole concept isn't going to change that much. And yet we have all these other changes.
I just added a show topic to Trello, by the way.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
What are you doing? I have to go and look and see what you just added to Trello.
Kind of, it's thought that I've long had that you just
reminded me of. I'm looking forward to that topic.
Yeah. So I agree with you. And I don't know, you know, do you remember what's like another something that Steve said that I'm not pissy about is he talked about milking the Mac for, you know, for all it was worth until basically he replaced it with the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it turns out Apple is still milking the Mac to a certain extent. Although the iPhone was the next thing.
Yeah, but the milking, it's not like an on off button. It's a faucet that slowly gets turned down,
right.
And there's no reason to turn down the faucet on the Mac yet.
No, we do. We still need the Mac. The Mac is the world is not. Some people don't need the Mac, or a Windows PC, but many people still need a Mac or a PC. So right, there's that. He said that 24 years ago, thereabouts. I think it was 1999, 23 years ago, maybe. So when shortly after he came back to, it was before he came back to Apple. It's 25 or 26 years ago. It's like, if I was in charge of Apple, what I'd do is I'd milk the Mac, and you know, until a kid replace it. Things, we are definitely in this age of incremental change and not revolutionary change. The iPhone was revolutionary to some extent. The iPad was revolutionary to some extent, but even those are now just being iterated. And my guess is that the next major revolution is going to be augmented reality that works.
That seems like a logical path.
Replacing the display. Or maybe even it's to some extent, you could even say adding a display to the rest of our lives too, i.e. glasses with augmented reality. That's probably the next major change. And that won't be a windowed system. Right?
Right. Oh my God. Can you imagine walking down the street trying to flick windows out of the way so that
tiling them?
Oh my God.
Well, it's in full screen mode. It's not. Yeah. Yeah. So that's
It'd be people walking around like they're like as if they're in a swarm of bees and trying to flick them all away. It's just what you would see.
From there to holographic displays like we're seeing in sci-fi. And then from holographic displays, the thing that I've mentioned, the thing that we talked about in the show, it's part of my novel, but like where you have some kind of implant that allows you to see things that other people can't see.
Mm-hmm.
That will be the change after holographic displays. And I guess, yeah. You know, I guess replacing our eyeballs could do that too without getting the brain implant.
Although augmenting our eyeballs? I mean, we're already seeing that happen.
Well, but yeah, it's true. We are. And contact, it'll be glasses and it'll be contact lenses of some sort. And then at some point there will be some kind of bionic eye. And then some people will choose to have that as opposed to only, you know, like that's their only option to be able to see.
Well, and we already have that to a degree. There's a company, actually was a company. Oh, man, those poor people that got left hanging with that one. But anyhow, there's a company, pharmaceutical company, that developed this kind of implant system for people that had extremely limited vision, eye damage, but there was still enough functionality that you could get signals in, and then you add this in, and it's like, I guess like glasses you wear that have sensors, and then it feeds info into your optic nerves, and it allows a form of sight. So, you know, it's not like you can look and see everything as if it's this like complete digital representation, but now you have or you have the ability to pick out the contrast between things. So you can see where stuff is, even though you might not be able to read a book. So you can tell where the book is.
Colorblind treatment like that too.
Yeah. And you know, so we've got that stuff happening already.
It's happening. It's not here, but it's happening. It's kind of here, but it's not here. Certainly not. Yeah. It's not mainstreamed.
Yeah, it's only a matter of time before it turns into something that does exactly what you're talking about, where it augments what we're already seeing. Yeah. And, you know, and then maybe for people like me that have to wear glasses all the time, then it can work as an assistive vision device as well.
Yeah. All right. We are, let's see, our half hour show is 47 minutes.
Okay, so still shorter than when we did an hour show and it was like an hour 20.
It's true. It is true. Let me do this. All right, Jeff, that is this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can shoot us a note over on the Twitters at Context Machine, or I'm at, what am I, at GeekTales. GeekTells.
And I'm Jay Gamut.
On the Twitters?
On the Twitters.
Right.
And the Instagrams. And like the others.
Right. And we are still working on our new home, and eventually we'll have a new email address. It's very, very exciting stuff. We appreciate everyone who's stuck with us so far.
Yes. All of you rock.
Indeed. I think that's it, Jeff. Here we go. Check this out.